This is the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing on 105.3 The Fan.
Good morning. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing with your hosts, David Blassingame.
Good morning.
Tammy Pickard.
Good morning.
And me, Sybil Summers. We're going to be here till 10 o'clock, taking your phone calls, talking to you about cars. We've got Waddle on the board today. He's also answering phones, 877-881-1053. If you want to give us a call, maybe you have a question for David and Tammy. This is your time to call and get free expert advice. I was just talking to him behind the scenes about new Infinities and maybe getting one of those. Trading out of my Beamer, getting an Infiniti. And they're telling me all the pros and cons. So if you're weighing a couple different cars, you too can call up here and get some advice. You can also fan text us at 43733. And you can call AutoFlex. What are those numbers, David?
Either 817 or 972-234-1234, 888-234-1234 if you're out of the area.
And as always, the website is AutoFlex.com. You can click us on Facebook and like us on there. Follow along with all the stories we talk about here on the show. Sometimes we do lists and people like to refer back to them and go, wait a second, what was my car ranked on there? So if you ever want to do that, AutoFlex.com and click on Facebook, follow us on there. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up today. At 9:30, we're going to talk to James Walden from Direct Appraisal. He's going to help you with insurance.
Yeah, James is a really interesting guy. He helps people get money that they deserve from insurance companies. There are a lot of things that are involved when you have an accident. Part of that is loss of value, maybe a loss of your time on the job, maybe some pain and suffering. James is not an attorney, so he's not he doesn't sue insurance companies. He knows the tricks of the trade. That's what he does. In fact, that's going to be a big part of this morning's show, is the tricks of the trade of the insurance company.
Alrighty, but first, let's talk a little bit about car-truck collisions.
Well, you know, this is really interesting because the statistics show that 64%, injuries.
Easy for you to say.
All right, let's try it again. Death rates from crashes have dropped 64% between 2000, 2001, and 2008, 2009. In 8 years, death rates in collisions between cars and trucks has dropped 64%.
That's great.
Huge. Yeah. Mainly the reason, well, a couple of reasons. The National Highway Safety and Traffic Administration in 2003 had asked manufacturers to improve the way that SUVs and pickups fit with passenger vehicles. In other words, lower the bumpers so that they're not as high on the vehicle, and set them up so that the cars, when they do collide, aren't just a sure shot to really hurt somebody.
Right, because so, in the past, didn't the bumpers pretty much just go right into the sheet metal of a door frame?
Right.
You know, if you broadsided a tiny little car, well, mm-hmm. you could very likely hit people right around shoulder neck area with your big old bumper.
Right.
And it's kind of hard to survive that.
It
so,
is.
They really needed to lower those bumpers so that everything was going into the impact areas where the car is ready to, you know, because the cars were built to receive, you know, an impact from another car.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
not
the other
really
thing,
truck or SUV.
And the other thing that's happened is they've improved the safety features of small cars a great deal.
Airbags.
Small cars used to be sort of like little tin boxes, and now they're more like small luxury cars.
Mm-hmm. And then putting vehicle skid control, electronic brake distribution on these bigger trucks and SUVs has improved their control. So when these guys do have to hit their brakes, they don't go so out of control and hit you anyway.
Well, right. And it certainly has stopped a lot of the rollover accidents that happened, mm-hmm. and those were responsible for a lot of. Nobody wants to roll over in a car. It's not good.
Or be mm-hmm. rolled over
or
by
be rolled
a car.
Over. No.
Do Jeep Wranglers still have the stigma that they roll all the time?
No, they lost that when they found out they didn't.
Well,
but they actually did lower the center of gravity in that car, and they widened its stance, which did improve the ability not to roll over.
Mm-hmm. I would like to say I think the stigma comes from all those videos that we see about people with their four-wheel drive vehicles trying to basically drive straight up the side of a building.
Mm-hmm.
And then they roll over.
And they will turn over when you do
that.
They
will.
Yeah, when you run straight uphill and then turn sideways and then it falls down the hill, rolls over.
So if you include all those you know, foolish, crazy people that are doing things that are almost superhuman.
And the old bumper sticker that used to be upside down and it would say, if you can read this, flip me back over.
Nice.
That contributed to it, too. So this
I haven't
is good.
Seen that. I like it, though.
I'm glad that this car-truck collision rate has dropped.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine?
So that's good news for everybody out there.
But okay. At the same time, people, if you're in a little tiny car, Don't pull out in front of a big old Suburban or truck. You've got to think about the rate or the weight and the rate of speed. There's no way they can stop in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just, and semis, don't cut them off. You're going to get hit.
In a related story, yesterday, some members of Congress petitioned the EPA and tried to say that we shouldn't build much smaller, lighter cars because of the safety involved. Because if you're in a very small, very light car and you get hit by a pickup, the pickup wins every time. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, this next week, the oldest working car in the world is going to go on auction. It's going to be auctioned by RM Auctions. And it is a Didion et Tripardo du dos a dos steam runabout. And it's going to be auctioned in Hershey, Pennsylvania. They figure it's going to bring between $2 and $2.5 million.
Oh, my golly gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. It's a steam-powered vehicle. The guy that built it first built a three-wheel steam vehicle. This was clear back in, it was 127 years ago. He built a three-wheel steam vehicle, and then he decided, well, what the heck, let's put four wheels on it. It's a little more stable. So he bought a steam engine, attached it to a vehicle, built a vehicle around it, and there was the 1884 De Didion Bouton El Trepido.
I've never even heard of that.
Well, no, most people haven't. But it still runs and drives, which is really amazing.
Especially for a French vehicle.
This car, mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. This car, actually, this same car won the 1887 Paris to Versailles race, where he reached a remarkable 40 miles per hour steaming down the road.
He also was the only motor car in the race.
He was, in fact. That's how he won.
Wait, who was he racing against?
He was racing against no one.
Oh.
But he won. He entered and he won. They had a motor car race, and he was the only guy that showed up.
Wow.
You win.
I'm going to go to the AutoFlix Facebook page and look what see what a 127-year-old car looks like.
It really is sort of cool looking. It's a steam engine
This
car.
Vehicle has had only four owners in its entire lifetime, and one of the owners had it for 81 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
So the new owner that buys this vehicle will definitely treat it as a one-of-a-kind, very special museum
yep.
piece.
Being sold by the estate of John O'Quinn.
Hmm. I wonder if you would drive that. If you got it and it actually ran and it's 127 years old, wouldn't you want to take it for a spin?
Just... Not on Central.
No, not on Central. No way.
Maybe around my estate.
Yeah.
Where no one else could run over me. Where none of these texters and drivers could, you know, hit my $2.5 million.
Probably smart thinking.
Piece of museum.
Good morning to all our texter friends that are texting in. Good morning.
Just pull over.
Yes.
Do it at the red light and be sure and pay attention when it turns green. So I'd swear when people honk at other people to, you know, get going, it scares me every time.
I know.
I'm not ready for that big old honk.
That happened to me yesterday.
They honked at you?
Well, they were honking at somebody else, but I jumped whenever I heard it because I think it was the car behind
too.
Me. No, but I think I was changing the song on my iPod.
Oh, okay.
I was
okay.
At a red light, sure. Though. I had free hands. Okay, so should we talk a little bit about the Chevy Camaro ZL1?
Well, you know, we can. It's the 2012, it's the first ZL1 since 1969, and the ZL1 in 1969 was a very famous car. They only built 69 of them. They had a lot of horsepower, 500 horsepower, basically. So it was a very fast car, especially for the time. And Chevrolet is commemorating that with the 2012 Camaro a ZL1. And it is being sold at auction, and it's being purchased by Rick Hendricks, who owns Hendricks Motorsports. How about that?
That's cool. So what is the significance of ZL1? How is it different from a regular Camaro?
It's like a full race vehicle.
Oh, okay.
In 69, basically, they took the engine and powertrain out of their full race Corvettes that they produced,
mm-hmm.
and they put it in this Camaro and called it a ZL1. So now we've got the commemorative 2012 ZL1, first one sold at auction, $250,000 on September 24th.
Text us if you know what the horsepower is, anybody. I want to know what it is.
I bet
sure
they have to go to the Facebook. They'll have to go to our Facebook page and see.
Oh, they will?
Yeah.
Oh.
I bet. Well, they can.
Yeah. AutoFlex.com. Click on Facebook.
Because I don't know how many horsepower it is. And I would like to. Oh, yes, I do.
What? I put it in the story.
It's in the story.
Yeah.
Let's see if you know.
Okay.
Okay.
I have a guess. 500 horsepower.
We'll let other people guess too.
Close. Right.
And then
close.
we'll say no hints.
43733 if you have a guess. 2012 okay. Camaro ZL1.
Okay. About the newest thing on the market right now are the hatchbacks, and they are back. They're popular again, except now, you know, when hatchbacks were first introduced in the 70s, they were more of an extra storage vehicle. So it was like getting a station wagon without driving a station wagon.
Mm-hmm.
Now they are sporty little coupes, and they are hopped up. They've got great little engines in them, good equipment, lots of neat stuff. I think the first one, and I really like this car, is the 2012 Ford Focus ST. Mm-hmm. Really, really, you can get it with a turbocharged 246 horsepower 2.0 liter engine. That is a lot of power for a little bitty car.
I have to say I like this hatchback better than the sedan version of the Focus.
Yeah. Well, I do too. It's a better looking car, I think.
Yeah.
The lines are better. Anyway.
Gives it some pizzazz.
Great little car, great driving car. The next one on the list.
The Fiat 500. And this is another recent European transplant. We've all talked about it. It's a pretty cute little car.
J-Lo drives it.
Yeah, she does.
I didn't know she had, really?
She's got the new commercial out, and she drives her Fiat 500, and then she busts out into song and dance in the middle of the street.
I have not seen
that. Very dangerous.
I've seen a couple of these cars on the street. I've not seen anyone bust out into song and dance.
Me neither.
Only J-Lo could get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, we have a winner, by the
way. It's 101 horsepower. It's a 1.4-liter four-cylinder, so it's really great on gas.
Which means you can outrun it on foot. I'm just saying.
It's got some other go-fast goodies like a lowered suspension, beefier brakes, larger alloy wheels, and a vicious body kit.
Hey, you can call in if you don't agree with me, but I think it's ugly.
See, and I think the Fiat 500 is kind of cute.
Do you
and that's
really?
The is it pronounced Abarth? It's the Abarth model that has all that. And it'll start well past the 20,000 mark. It'll go on sale next year, and it might be a 2013 model.
And they have a Gucci version, as we learned here on the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
That's really pantyhose on a pig.
Do we have to stop for a break?
Yeah, I think we got a break.
Okay, we'll finish our list of the hottest new hatchbacks coming out in 2012 next on the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
Oh, welcome back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing. 877-881-1053 is the phone number here. If you have a question for David or Tammy, feel free to call us. You can also fan text us at 43733. And you can even call AutoFlex. David, what are the numbers?
Either 817 or 972-234-1234. In fact, if you wanted to drive any of these great cars we're talking about, that would be a really good idea because we can arrange for test drives for any or all of these vehicles, including the ugly little Fiat, at AutoFlex Leasing at either one of our offices in Richardson or in Arlington.
It's huggable. Oh, and I want to add to the horsepower for the Camaro for the new 2012 ZL1. Also, does anybody know what the 1969 ZL1 Camaro horsepower is?
I think I said that on the air.
Oh, you did?
But we have a winner for the 2012 model, 580 horsepower, and that is the horsepower on the ZL1 2012 Camaro.
Yay. Nice. So 69, it was 500.
Right.
2012, it's 580.
580, yeah.
All right.
With a lot more cool stuff on the car.
Oh, I read 430.
Okay.
Oh, but GM says it was known to produce more than 500.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Moving right along with our hatchbacks to get through this real quickly.
Wait, let's go over the two that we've already talked about before a break. 2012 Ford Focus. These are the hottest new hatchbacks of 2012. And the Fiat 500.
Okay, moving right along. The Hyundai Veloster. Or Veloster, by golly.
Veloster.
Veloster?
I want to call it a Velociter.
It sounds like a dinosaur when you do that.
Yes, well, it looks like one. Weird.
Anyway, it's a hatchback coupe. It's got a direct injection, 138 horsepower, 1.6-liter four-cylinder engine. You can get it with a six-speed or a six-speed automatic with dual clutch. And they're talking about a turbocharged Veloster, which will have 200 horsepower. Again, that's a lot of horsepower in a little bitty car.
Is that a brand new model, or have those been out before? Okay, because I hadn't heard of it.
And they also describe it as a strange little car with three doors, one on the driver's side and two on the passenger side.
Which makes it a strange little car.
That is
interesting. And they say, while not a traditionally beautiful car, you won't lose it in the parking lot.
That is true. And you don't have to worry about anybody stealing it either.
That's probably.
Go ahead.
Well, maybe for parts, but not for. Okay. The Mini Coupe has come out. Mini's always been building cars with razor-sharp handling and engines that love to rev, and now this one cranks up another notch. We're very impressed with this car. It is just a two-seater, no rear seats. They've been jettisoned, But that's not a great loss because, you know, it's pretty cramped inside. It's pretty dialed in. They call it point and squirt driving. I'm sorry. I think that's funny. The engines range from 121 horsepower, 1.6 liter four cylinder to a turbocharged 208 horsepower power plant with the John Cooper Works model. That'll make it quite a bit more expensive, that John Cooper Works. And just FYI, no resale value in that. You totally lose your resale value on that John Cooper Works unless you find somebody else who's willing to pay the crazy money for
what
it.
What is that? Is that like an Eddie Bauer edition of a Ford Explorer?
Pumped up brake. Oh, what?
The John Cooper Works.
No. It's performance. It'll be horsepower, brakes, that kind of suspension. But it definitely adds a great deal of cost to the car. So you have to be really into it to want to pay that extra money.
Gotcha.
I'd say go for the cheaper model because you get great fuel economy. You still get the great looking Mini Cooper and your resale value is really strong.
Handling like a BMW, right? Because they're made by
Minis. Yeah, all the Mini Coopers are just so fun to drive. In fact, for a long time, and I haven't checked recently, but I wouldn't even be surprised, on a 4-year scale, the Mini Cooper had the highest resale value out of any car manufactured.
Wow.
On 4 years.
They are cute little cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, lots of things attributed to it. Great fuel economy, the warranty, the free maintenance, and then, of course, they were cute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving right along, the next car is, and I think it's a pretty cool little car, Chevrolet Spark, but now it is a very small car.
That was my opinion.
Very, very small car. It's bigger than...
A smart car?
A little.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, it must be
And
tiny.
It sort of looks like one also.
Not going to make it here.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's certainly going to get good gas mileage. You've got a 1.0 and a 1.2 liter engine. Well, we talked about that with a Fiat.
So is that also new this year then?
Yes,
that
it is.
That hasn't been
here.
Out before? Yeah. Okay.
That's been selling other places, right? That's
yeah,
been
they've
overseas.
Been selling it in Europe.
Okay.
But
Where
anyway.
Gas is like $10 a gallon.
Chevrolet Spark. To get through these real quickly, the Volkswagen Turbo Beetle, which is a great car, the new Volkswagen Turbo Beetle, they've elongated the car. They say they've made it more manly to appeal to more men because mostly women you see driving Beetles.
It even came with a little flower in the dashboard.
In the vase. Exactly, yeah. But the new Beetle is also going to be turbocharged, so it's going to be a lot faster. 2.5-liter five-cylinder engine, standard six-speed dual-clutch transmission. So they're hoping for... A little more, and actually the promotional stuff I read on this said that they were making it more like the Porsche, which I thought was sort of comical. But anyway, it is a great car, and it's a great looking car, so we'll see if they manage to make it more friendly, more man-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess finally, the only other hatchback that we need to mention is the 2012 Ferrari FF hatchback, which comes standard with 651 horsepower V12 engine.
It is, in fact,
a hatchback, but I can't see loading like a lumber from Home Depot on the back of it.
No way.
208 miles per hour, 0 to 60 in 3.7. And if you've got an extra 300,000, it's a great hatchback.
I'm going to go get one tomorrow.
Me too.
Uh-huh.
We'll have to wait till Monday. They won't be open on Sunday.
That's true.
Yeah.
Darn.
So there you have it. If you want to refer back to the list of the hottest hatchbacks of 2012, head to autoflex.com, click on that Facebook page, and you can find all the stories we talk about.
And if you want to drive one of those cars, give us a call at Autoflex. We'll arrange, or drive two of them, or drive three of them. We'll line them up side by side for you.
That's
right. Well, the one with the best resale value out of all those, you guys, will be that Mini Cooper Coupe, just so you know.
Keep that in mind. All right, let's talk a little insurance, because we've all had to deal with the insurance adjusters before.
You know, I think it's interesting because people don't really understand their relationship to the insurance adjuster. They are the victim in most cases, and they're trying to get their car fixed, they're trying to get medical assistance, they're trying to get whatever they need. And the insurance adjuster's job is to do that as inexpensively as possible for the company that he works for. Mm-hmm. So, although... It's not a predatory kind of thing. He's not looking out for your best interest. He's looking out for his company's best interest, which oftentimes doesn't coincide with your best interest.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do when you have an accident? The first thing is you don't say anything.
Keep your mouth shut.
Don't talk to the other guy's insurance company. Don't talk to the other guy. Answer only factual questions to the police officer if he's there. You can exchange information, but don't comment on anything about the accident.
Well, okay, first of all, make sure everybody's okay. but don't apologize.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you are sorry that it happened or whatever, you're beginning to already maybe admit fault, mm-hmm. and it may not be your fault. You're just sorry that it happened.
Right.
Keep your mouth shut. And we all have diarrhea of the mouth
yeah.
when these things happen. It's nervous energy that makes us start just spewing everything that happened to us this week.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a situation where they do have the fire truck show up or maybe an ambulance shows up. You cannot afford to comment to mm-hmm. any of the personnel.
None of
because
them.
That insurance adjuster is going to corner that emergency.
Question them all.
And he's going to ask them everything you said.
Mm-hmm.
So if you said anything that he could use to compromise your position, you've sort of shot yourself in the
even
foot.
Even the beers you had earlier in the day.
Oh, yeah.
That may no longer be in your system.
Right, mm-hmm. but if you mention them, it could cost you sympathy with a jury.
The girlfriend that broke up with you last night, don't mention it. It
right.
could mm-hmm. be somehow, it could have caused you to be distracted. Who knows? Keep your mouth shut at the scene of the accident. Don't talk to anybody.
Claims adjusters love to hear things like apologies. I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it. Horrible.
Mm.
Hyperbole. Well, it was just, he was at the red light at the last minute, and I was there, and don't get into describing things. You don't need to.
Remarks about whiplash or your old car being ready for the junk heap anyway.
Yep.
Those nervous jokes can be used against you.
Absolutely. Too much information. Don't say the accident occurred the same day you lost your job or you broke up with your girlfriend, like Tammy says.
Right. So, one person says that a young numbskull who hit an elderly woman's car and jumped out to apologize said, oh, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have smoked pot before driving, and I'm so sorry that I was texting my girlfriend while I was behind the wheel.
Whoops.
That was the pot talking,
right.
apparently.
This is good to know because this is the kind of stuff you never think about.
No,
whenever
you just start talking.
Yeah.
Every time I drive past an accident, you can tell they're just talking.
Yep.
Those people just yeah. talk.
It's not good.
Mm-hmm.
Not yeah. good. And the other thing is you shouldn't be afraid to speak up either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're hurt,
right.
you need to say you're hurt.
Absolutely.
Because that could lay groundwork for getting your therapy, getting your medication, getting whatever you need after that. You need to start right away. I mean, it's great that you're a big, tough guy, or maybe you're a great mom, and you don't want to say, well, I can't lift up my child anymore because my
can't
shoulders
take care
hurt.
Of my kids.
You know, women don't want to say that, big, tough guys, or I'm a big, tough guy. Forget it. If you're hurt, say something about being hurt. Say it right away.
For example, I had an accident many, many, many years ago. Everything was fine. It was a minor accident.
Mm-hmm.
My neck is still killing me to this day. Don't be so quick to sign off on everything. Wait several days. Soft tissue damage doesn't show up for a while. And then later, you don't want to feel like a crybaby. You don't want to feel like you're committing fraud. But you know what? I'm still living with this 25 years later.
Well, you know, they suggest maybe keeping a pain journal.
Mm-hmm.
Writing everything down that you feel and stuff so you've got it down in black and white.
And
if that claims adjuster asks a young mom, you can still take care of your kids, can't you? Well, of course she wants to say yes. But mm-hmm. if you really can't reach down and pick up your child, how are you going to get the money to hire a mother's helper?
And then the other thing is you've got to be really careful because insurance adjusters are trained to ask questions in certain ways, like, how could you have helped avoid this accident?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How much do you think you're responsible? Do you think the weather or the fog might have affected you? Do you have any previous injuries, like back injuries or neck injuries?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to ask all these probing questions, and they're going to turn around. It's like being arrested. They're going to use that against you.
Like I just said, my neck still hurts. If I have another accident and my neck is injured, I guess I won't get a dime.
And yeah. And I think the other thing to remember is they're trying to settle the claim as quickly mm-hmm. as possible because fast saves them money.
Mm-hmm.
Not in your best interest. Your best interests are served by getting your car repaired properly,
mm-hmm.
if it can be, by getting a fair settlement on the total loss of your car, and that's another whole thing that we can go into.
Right.
There's a number of ways to establish value on your car. You do not have to take what the insurance company tells you. You can go online, see what they're selling for, call car lots, see what they're selling for, look in the newspapers, see what they're selling for, and compare all of those things with what they offer you. The other thing is, write all of those things down. Document them.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got examples, practical examples of what your car is worth, because they're probably going to offer you less than you think your car is worth.
Oh, especially on the first offer. You know, when you go to buy a car or a house or just about anything that's negotiable, you don't really just take the first offer. ordinarily, do you? So don't do that with the insurance either. You know, make sure that you're getting a fair shake. You can do all that research online, print it all out, it's all there. Today, it's even easier for the consumer or the victim to take care of themselves, protect themselves, than it was, you know, 20 years ago.
And to segue into the next section of the show, where James Walden's going to be joining us, be very careful of the repair shop. And if they suggest that you take a car to a certain repair shop, my advice would be not to take it there, because they have arrangements with repair shops that save them money that, again, may not be in your best interest. Find a good repair shop that works for you, not for the insurance company, and deal with them on the repair of your car. And the insurance company has to deal with them.
And research those repair shops, because they're not all the same either. So we'll be back with more, right?
Yes, we're going to talk more about not being screwed over by the insurance adjuster next with James Walden from Direct Appraisal. Direct Appraisal. Stay tuned to the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing with David Blassingame, Tammy Pickard, who's dancing, and me, Sybil. Waddle's on our board. You can still call us 877-881-1053. We are going to talk to James Walden. He's from a website, directdv.com, here to talk to us all about diminished value, which is something a lot of people aren't familiar with.
I learned about it early on in my career at AutoFlex Leasing. As long as I've been in the car business, never knew about it. A client told me about it when I asked him if his car had ever been wrecked before, because I was trying to get an appraisal on it. He said, yes, but I got my, you know, I filed for diminished value, you know, from the other guy's insurance. I said, what do you mean? And that's when he told me, and we'll let James explain what that is.
Good morning, James.
How y'all doing?
Doing good.
How are you, James?
Pretty good. Well, basically what's understood to be when you say diminished value is the difference in the value of the vehicle just before the accident versus just after the repair. Technically, it's considered loss of market value or differences in value. Diminished value kind of has a different legal definition, but it's known as diminished value in the industry, and insurance companies refer to that type of claim.
And James, how do you determine what that diminishment is, what that difference is in value from pre-accident to post-accident repair?
Well, what we do is I do a market analysis. It's a lot like, similar to like a real estate appraisal. We have the data purchased, and we put it in a database. And then, of course, when we have a customer, we query the database, depending on, of course, the particulars of that claim, the year, the make, the model, the mileage, the region, severity of accident, things like that. And we query that database. I review it. We document one disclosed with damage versus ones that are not. And, of course, then we draw our conclusions from that, and that's how we would determine it.
Well, and who can claim for diminished value? If you've been in an accident, does it involve only your insurance company or only the other insurance company in a liability claim? Who actually can claim for diminished value?
Now it's a tort claim or third-party claim is what they're referred to. In other words, not your fault. They got rid of the coverage early 2000s. It used to be covered under the policy for years and years. And then they, of course, got rid of it.
So then if you were hit by someone else and it was their fault, you would be able to file for diminished value on your vehicle?
Correct. Even if it was your fault, of course, you're going to have a loss of market value. And I've been told it's considered a casualty loss, and you could possibly, you know, reduce your tax liability because, you know, it's a casualty loss.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, you can basically write it off on your taxes.
Really?
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do all insurance companies pay diminished value for if they're involved in a liability, or do they tell you they don't pay it and you have to find out?
Well, they're not going to tell you anything, first of all.
Shocker.
They don't tell people things. You have to know your claim. There's always three things I tell people you have to do in a claim. You have to document it. You have to defend it, and, of course, you have to decide what you want to do. Those are three things you have to do.
The three Ds.
Yep.
Document, defend, and decide.
Okay.
It's all up to you. When you're in a wreck, it's up to you. It's not the insurance company's responsibility to get things done. Now, they're eventually going to do it, but it's going to be at their own sweet time and their in their claims process. Mm. It might not be lining up with what you want to do, you see.
Right, because they're not the ones that had the wreck. You did.
Right.
So
right.
It's up to you to get it all handled.
We've talked before about using your cell phone camera to take pictures of the scene if that ever happens, like you just said, to document it.
That's right. Document mm-hmm. the damage. At the scene, you document the values of your loss. There's five values that you have to know in every single claim. If they cannot give you these five values, then they cannot give you what the economics of your claim are. That's the way it is. That is, what is the value right before the wreck? What is the value right after the wreck? You know, people call it salvage value. What is the cost of repair? What is the loss of use of the vehicle during the repair? And what is the loss of market value if it cannot be completely repaired? And that is the five values you have to know. And without those, you don't know what your damages are. The insurance company, that nobody knows.
Mm. Right. That's part of the documentation.
That's right. That's part of the documentation.
And it is up to the person involved in the accident to get this information.
It's your property. You have to defend it. And you have to decide what you want to do from that. If that is why you have to document it, it's because I can't tell you how many claims I've had where at initial evaluation from the carrier said, hey, your car is thousands of dollars being from total. Now, let me give you an example. I've had a $25,000 car, which is about the average value of a car nowadays. You know, a nice or late model car, should I say that.
Right.
The one that would be, you know, worth a claim worth pursuing. Enough money in the value of the loss will be worth pursuing.
Sure.
Right.
Anyhow, you say you have a $25,000 car right before the wreck. Wham, you get hit. Now your car is, you want to do the value right after the wreck, worth $10,000, salvage value, people call it. All right, so technically I have a $15,000 claim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, if I was to pay $15,000, sell mine to the salvage guy for $10,000, I'm back to $25,000. I'm even. Okay? I'm not technically out. I'm made whole again.
Right.
So what happens is you're sitting here with a $15,000 claim. Your insurance company comes along, and their insurance company comes along and says, hey, car's not totaled. It's only $8,000
right.
worth of damage. Okay, well, I think it's more than that. Well, no, we don't. I don't think it can be fixed. Oh, no, we can fix it. Well, you get in the shop, they get it dismantled, start working on it, all of a sudden it's $18,000.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that happens all the time, James.
All the time. But here's the kicker. Okay, not only did your insurance company lose $3,000, well, or upside down the claim $3,000, now you've had a $18,000 repair done to your $25,000 car.
Exactly.
What do you think the loss of value is going to be? It's going to be, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000. There's no telling. Depends
Huge.
On what kind of car it is.
Yeah,
Huge.
And let me
give you a tell, though. Your insurance company has upside down $3,000. They can roll that mistake back to every policyholder, but you're stuck with holding the bag.
Exactly. You know, I deal with this all the time, and people don't realize that. You have to look at the cost of repairs. You have to look at the salvage value of the car. And if you can add those together, and it's the value of the car, you have a total loss. It's a constructive total, but it is a total loss. And the other thing that people don't consider is a lot of times insurance companies will write a light appraisal on the front end because the vehicle hasn't been dismantled.
Right.
They actually know there's more damage there, but they figure they're going to get off a lot lighter by repairing the car than they are by paying you off on a total loss. So they'll go ahead and put it in the shop, just like you said, or you'll go ahead and put it in the shop. Then all of a sudden, here comes the big supplement. And the car should have been a total loss to begin with. Then you're stuck with a car that's got great diminished value.
And the body shop that's looking at it is not going to indicate that there's more than that because they don't get paid if they don't repair the car.
Exactly.
If they tell you it's a total loss, they get Zippo.
So, and back to those factory shops, and I know that Allstate actually tried to open a couple of shops in Texas, but the state closed them down.
No, they still own them.
Do they?
Several. Oh, yeah, they still own them. They shut them down from building any more.
Okay, I didn't know that. Well, let's talk a little bit about a shop that your insurance company or the other insurance company tells you to take your car to. What's your advice on that?
Well, I can say one sentence that everybody understands. Don't trust them.
Okay. That's pretty well it.
I have never seen a serious accident from a preferred shop be properly repaired. Never. I've been in business 20 years.
And why is that? Let's explain to our listeners.
It's because their approach is the cheapest, fastest way. A lot of these HMO body shops are on time schedules, meaning that I can fix anything within this period of time, 8 or 9 days. And if they don't get that vehicle repaired within those 8 or 9 days, guess what? They get a reduction on the claims they get value or the rate they get from the insurance company. They have to pay for the rental expense. So
wow.
What do you think they're going to do?
Right. They're going to shortcut your,
yeah. There with somebody barking, you got to get this car out. I'm going to tell you something. Nowadays, cars are built with precision we've never known. And there is very few body men right now that have the top training to fix these cars, not to mention the equipment. That is one of my glaring things that I see in body shop. Even these big people who claim to have high caliber collision repairs, people that claim to be kings of service, they don't even have basic safety equipment to check your structural measurements on your vehicle.
You know, we've been doing this for a long, long time, and we do have certain shops that we refer people to.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, insurance companies don't really like to deal with them.
Oh, it's a battle.
Because they will not shortcut a job. They will make sure it's fixed right, and it will be nice when it's finished.
That's right. And those other body shops, and listen, those body men would do it so long as they were paid. That's the whole deal about those HMO bodies. It's like a hospital. They're going to try to get you down to the lowest price point. The problem with body shops, in my opinion, or every price out the body shop has to deal with fixed prices. So everything they do, the price is fixed. So there's only one really competition element, is that how many customers you can get in the door.
And they're just doing that so that they can get an automatic referrals for these, from Allstate or State Farm or whatever insurance company. They just want the automatic, because people just go. We're like sheeple.
Oh, yeah.
We'll just go where we're herded.
We're talking to James Walden from DirectDV.com, helping us out with diminished value.
I'm so excited that you're on the air with us, because I get so passionate when I talk to people about this exact stuff when I'm on the phone with them at work, and it's so important for everybody to know. So keep going.
Yeah, James, let's talk, because this is what you've done for us and for our customers. Talk about diminished value and what kind of money can people look for in addition to getting their car back after it's repaired. What kind of money, as far as diminished value, can they look at from an insurance company when someone like you gets involved?
Well, I can tell you my average payment for diminished value is around $4,000, real close, about $3,900. That's overall average, but I can show you actual copies of checks from all extremes. I've done one Ferrari where they wrote a $52,000 check for loss of value, and I've had claims, down to small Toyotas for $1,200, $1,400. I typically won't do a loss of value claim, or what y'all call a diminished value claim, unless I think it's worth spending the money, because I charge no money to do that of a service.
Sure.
And so then you have to add in the kind of a little bit of, factor that you have to be involved in that. And so, I say a lot of cars have loss of value, but is it worth it? Is it worth the headache?
Right. Well, and the other thing, the average person is not really equipped to go in and negotiate with an insurance company on diminished value like you are.
And that's why they hire you.
That's exactly why they hire you, and that's why you've been invaluable to several individuals that have done business with us over the years.
We've referred people to you.
Yes, yes. I appreciate that. I know I can think of two or three off the top of my head were pretty eventful claims.
Yeah. Well, they call us up, and they're like, what do I do? And I'm like, James Walden, this is who you call. I can remember one client that called me. He had just leased his $100,000 Mercedes. It was about 3 months old, and he got into a terrible wreck. And the body shop that he went to, he didn't get you involved, but fortunately, the body shop that I sent him to knows all the things you do. And it was a battle, and he would call me from time, why is it taking so long? I said, because I sent you to the right guy who is not going to let your insurance company cheap out on this car.
That's worked out. That's a big point nowadays. There's a lot of what I consider HMO, PPO body shops out there. And that's, I'm going to tell you something. The difference between that is there's no rules, no regulation, no oversight. They get to do whatever the hell they want to do. Okay? And
wow.
You are left with your own devices. There is no laws against whatever they want to do. Of course, I'm not talking about deception or just things like that. I'm talking about how they practice with each other,
right,
how the price is negotiated, blah, blah, blah. There's all these things that are involved. There's, you know, big, big money involved there.
James, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us on the show. This is James Walden. He's with Direct Appraisal. And what is the website again, James?
DirectDV.com.
And that DV is in diminished value. So DirectDV.com is a way anyone can reach James to use his services.
And James, I would just like to offer an invitation for you to come back again in the future, because this is such valuable information. And we know that everybody in the Metroplex did not hear our show today, but they'll hear it again in the future. So we want you to definitely come back.
I'll be happy to.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Thanks for having me on.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
There he goes. If you want to check out the website, it's directdv.com. Now, coming up next, we're going to talk about electric cars, everything you've always wanted to know on the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive. Brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
Welcome back. It's the Saturday Morning Test Drive brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing. David Blessingame, Tammy Pickard, me, Sybil. We're talking cars. We're talking cars with you at 877-881-1053 or 43733 if you want to fan text us. Let's get right into it. Electric cars are the hot new thing.
Well, they're on everybody's hot new thing list, and here's sort of a neat trick. And I first was exposed to this by the general manager of General Motors new car development, and he was talking about electric cars, and he says, you know, you can use them as storage batteries. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, you hook your car up to the plug it in at home, that hooks it up to the electric grid. Electricity flows both ways. So if the electric grid needs power because maybe it's the middle of the day and everybody's got their air conditionings on, if your car's plugged in, it can actually draw current from your car and your meter will turn the other direction.
Weird.
Yeah. Now, you got to think about this, but if you've got a fleet of cars, they could produce a tremendous amount of electricity in peak demand at times. So even though it's your car and it's your electricity, it flows both ways. And if you generate electricity, or if the grid takes electricity from your car, it actually reduces your electric bill. And they're talking about, if electric cars become widespread, this actually being a good source of prevention for brownouts or power outages, because you'd have all these electric cars plugged in. And if you take the numbers, you get 100,000 of these things, all of a sudden you've got a lot of power that you could draw on during peak times.
Not a buyer. Not buying it.
Well, I'm just saying. They're putting it out there.
And I'm just saying, too.
And
don't
finally,
believe it.
Finally, you know, the Chinese, we talked about this last week, had been pressuring General Motors to share information about their electric vehicles. They want them to share the technology with them. And General Motors at that time had said, no, we'll never do that. And so they figured out a way to never do that. They've now formed a partnership with China. And China and General Motors will be partners, along with Mercedes in China, Volkswagen in China, Ford in China, Chrysler in China,
bunch
and everybody else you can think of
bunch
in China.
Of suckers.
They are all now joining partnerships with the Chinese government in order to be able to build factories and sell cars over there. And guess what? Now they're not giving the Chinese government their technology, because now the Chinese government's partners with them. So they get it anyway.
Ah.
Not good.
Tricky stuff.
Yeah.
All right, that wraps up all the time we have today. AutoFlex is still open for your business, though, if you want to give them a shout. Two locations. David, what are the phone numbers?
Either 817 or 972-234-1234. If you're thinking about an SUV or pickup, we have been working steadily to bring in leases early. So we've got some great deals on some SUVs and pickups right now at AutoFlex Leasing. These are going to be leases that we have brought in early because the people had equity in them at this time, and they're now available for sale or for lease if you're thinking about a pre-owned vehicle.
And it's a good day to go test drive in, so check that out. You can also head to AutoFlex.com, click on the Facebook link, like our page, and follow along with all the stories we talk about here today. We're here every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. thanks to Waddle on the Board. Up next, it's the Southwest Classic, A&M versus Arkansas, live from Cowboy Stadium, so stay tuned. We'll see you back here next time on the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in